Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund manages the financing and annual payments to retired federal employees and their families. The $650 billion increase to the credit limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting a squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost 500,000 workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says that Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, 16% of those jobs went to blacks. Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Here's today's multiple choice quiz. Dick Cheney is 1, loopy, 2, churlish, 3, thuggish, 4, dangerous, or 5, all of the above. Choose the combo. We saw all of these uglies come out in Cheney the day after the election. John Kerry had barely finished his concession speech when Dick seized the national microphone to growl that the Bushites had not only taken the victory, but also won a mandate. So get ready, world, here they come. A mandate? They barely got 51% of the vote, meaning 49% of the people voted to toss them out on their duffs. A 2% margin is to mandate what near beer is to beer. Also, both pre-election polls and exit polls showed clearly a big chunk of people voting for George W. were actually strongly opposed to his agenda. So why did they choose him? Some were simply voting against Kerry. Some said they were voting against gays, and some were vaguely voting for Bush's, quote, moral values. But a majority of voters said they definitely opposed such specifics as Bush's tax cuts for the rich, his handling of the economy, and his war of lies in Iraq. Despite the public's real desires on national policies, however, the Bush gang is gearing up to ram through an extremist agenda supported only by their ideological cohorts and corporate benefactors. Among his priorities, granting trillions of dollars in permanent tax giveaways to the rich, replacing the progressive income tax with a totally regressive national sales tax, launching the privatization of Social Security, expanding the USA Patriot Act, and extending Bush's Iraqi war into Iran. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Bushites have no mandate for this mugging. To get information and help fight their power grab, call Campaign for America's Future, 202-955-5665.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? Ha, ha, ha. She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Leo Tolstoy provides our quote for the day. Everyone thinks of changing the world, no one thinks of changing himself. It's multiple layers of meaning in there. In the second hour of our program today, as usual on Thursdays, we will have our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. We're going to be talking to Danny Goodman about what you can do about spyware that watches what you do on your computer. And, you know, what's the whole trend with spam and all this? It's going to be an interesting thing. In the meantime, a lot of economic news that is almost masquerading as something else. I find this just absolutely fascinating. And it was amazing. In fact, this morning when we sat down and put together the program, there, you know, we had a lot of stories and a lot of information for the day. And then I said, let me, you know, take a few minutes here and read the Wall Street Journal. And it was like just thing after thing in there just jumped out at me as, you know, here it is again, here it is again, here it is again. And to the best of my knowledge, outside of perhaps the Workers Independent News, the WIN News service those of you listening on those folks listening on the internet here as at the top of the hour here, I know some of our radio stations carry it. Most of them carry their own news, local news, or other network news. But generally this stuff isn't pulled together. And so I want to do that here in this hour and give you kind of an overview. Let's start out with this story from the Boston Globe, actually, today. Study doubles jobs offshore. Michael Brightman, writes Kimberly Blanton in the Globe, is reminded daily that workers in New Delhi do the same job he does. His Indian counterparts routinely direct AT&T customers to him for long-distance billing problems that the New Delhi workers can't answer. Brightman and 130 others will be laid off Friday from AT&T's call center on Massachusetts' southeastern coast. Now, there's a lot, you know, going on and saying that there's not so much offshoring going on. Well, this is because what's going on is companies are shutting down one department and then opening up another or contracting with a private company, actually not even doing it themselves. In India or elsewhere. India seems to be the big place for white-collar jobs, China for blue-collar jobs, by and large. And so it doesn't get called offshoring or outsourcing. Instead, it's simply laying off workers and going to a vendor. And very often that vendor is a U.S. company that just happens to have offices in India. In fact, as they point out in the Boston Globe, in 5 years, AT&T has cut its national call center employment by half. By half. Jobs may be cut in the United States and employment may increase overseas, but companies are reluctant to draw connections between the two, while unions are only too willing to do so. But again, you're not hearing the voice of unions in the news. It's remarkable how little the voice of unions are covered in the news, or of workers, period. It seems that economic news, historically economic news, which had to do with how are we doing I mean, how are those of us who work for a living doing has been replaced by, you know, how are the folks who make their living sitting around on their, you know, sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to show up doing? In other words, you know, what's happening with the stock market? Things like this. Anyhow, they point out the Boston Globe story, jobs may be cut in the United States and employment may increase overseas, but companies are reluctant to draw connections between the two. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce pegged the number at perhaps 200,000 jobs a year, but a new report commissioned by a bipartisan congressional commission said 406,000 U.S. jobs will migrate overseas this year. I think, frankly, that that's a conservative number, but that's still mind-boggling. That's about half of 1% of the entire U.S. workforce. And as I said, I think it's probably closer to 1% or 2% a year that we're losing. If you look at underemployment, you look at the number of people who, you know, 3 years ago before Bush came into office, or 7, 8 years ago before Clinton signed NAFTA and GATT, had good jobs, good, well-paying jobs where they could raise their family, pay for their medical expenses, put their kids through college, have a pension, have retirement. You look at the number of those jobs that are just gone, and those people are not showing up as unemployed because they're working at Walmart or, you know, Kmart, and we're going to get to that in a minute. It's just really quite remarkable. Job movement overseas, says Kate Broffenbremer, Professor at Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations, is absolutely accelerating and is changing in its nature. She adds, whereas in 2001 it was almost all in manufacturing, now we see an increase in information technology, communications, financial services, and white-collar work from research and design to the back office. And then here comes, of course, the obligatory conservative talking point provided for this story for the Boston Globe by Shang Jinwei of the International Monetary Fund. He says, when a company employs people overseas, lower costs and high profit enable it to hire elsewhere in the organization. He says, we create one job for every job lost. Yeah, right. That, you know, every worker in America understands that, for sure. This is why, no, what happens is, when corporations offshore like this, is they increase their profits, they increase the dividends that they pay out to their shareholders, keeping in mind the top 1% of Americans own about 40% of all the wealth in America. The top 10% of Americans own about 90% of all the wealth in America. These are the folks that say, well, you know, more than half of Americans own stocks. Yeah, there's a lot of middle-class families who have a 401k with $5,000 in the stock market. Big deal. We're talking about, you know, the top 10% owning 90% of America's wealth. We're talking about people who have big investments. And they're making out like bandits. And that's why, of course, this is, you know, this is the news, the hot news. And in fact, I thought it was really interesting, this analysis that we talked about in the program day before yesterday, that Christian conservatives did not show up in larger numbers as a percentage. They showed up in larger numbers, absolutely, but as a percentage, they did not show up in larger numbers in 2004 than they did in 2000 and vote for George W. Bush. And in those states where there were anti-gay initiatives, there wasn't a significant increase in the Bush vote among people for whom that was an issue. Turns out that the main group who showed up for Bush, the additional 2% that he got that pushed him from 49 to 51%, assuming that all the voting machines actually worked right, came from people earning over $100,000 a year, which is even below the top 10%. That's more like the top 30%, let's say, more or less. I think the top 20% are people earning over $220,000 a year, but as I recall. But anyhow, here the IMF saying, you know, you create a job for every job lost. Yes, maybe you create a new job at Walmart for every good manufacturing job lost. In the meantime, U.S. producer prices, now as a result of this insane fiscal and economic policy, it's so important to remember, you know, we didn't have these wild swings from the 30s, basically, up until the 80s. There were business cycles, certainly. But the last time, you have to look back to the 1870s, 1890s, and the 1920s to see these wild swings. These were the result of conservative economic policies, of laissez-faire economics. Just, you know, let the corporations run the show. It doesn't matter. Government has no role in the economy. The libertarian slash conservative worldview. And Roosevelt came along and said no. And in fact, prior to that, in 1880, we tried to rein that in, the Sherman Antitrust Act. Lincoln tried to rein it in. He didn't live long enough to really do what he, you know, in the Civil War consumed so much of his energies. But this really began with, you know, Ronald Reagan bankrupting the country and creating this recession slash, you know, hyper. Well, actually, it goes back to Nixon was the first guy to do this. You know, have a war, a guns and butter policy. You could say LBJ actually started it. Let's be nonpartisan here. With his guns and butter policy, Nixon carried it on, you know, hysterically. Let's spend, spend, spend in Vietnam and, you know, domestically and just borrow. And what happened? We saw inflation go up. We saw interest rates go up, trying to calm down inflation. Home mortgage rates were running 15, 16, 17%. Credit cards, 20%. I mean, they passed through 10% for the first time in the history of the country. There used to be laws, federal laws, called usury laws. It was illegal to charge more than 10% interest. It was considered inappropriate. Usury is what it was called. It was a crime. During the Nixon administration, those laws had to be repealed. And this absolute fiscal irresponsibility. And then Reagan repeated it. And, of course, George Bush inherited the results. The Bush recession, which was really the Reagan recession. Clinton put the thing back together. And Bush, to some extent, the first Bush, I mean, he actually raised taxes and started, he had to undo some of the damage that Reagan had done, to his credit. And it did help Clinton. And Clinton continued with it. During the Clinton years, the Center for American Progress points out, poverty fell by 25.2%. Poverty has climbed steadily under President Bush, however. According to the most recent data from the Census Bureau, the number of Americans living in poverty has risen 10%. Since 2000. That means nearly 36 million Americans, one in eight, now live in poverty, and tens of millions are considered working poor. Wage growth has fallen dramatically over the past 4 years. In 2000, median weekly wages grew by 4.9%. This fell to a mere 2% in 2003, meaning that adjusted for inflation, wages actually fell. And for those who found work, the recoveries of questionable value in an upside-down economy where profits have soared, yet families' benefits are nullified by the rapidly rising costs of housing, education, and medical care, all of which are jumping at double-digit rates. And, of course, there's more people unable to find work than 4 years ago. In 2000, the unemployment rate was 4%. During his terms, President Clinton created 22 million new jobs. Putting that in historical perspective, that's the most created under any single president since the 1920s, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Under George Bush, 490,000 jobs disappeared. First president since Herbert Hoover, you've heard that before, to lose jobs. And, of course, the deficits. We'll get back to that in a minute. And so we see U.S. producer prices shooting up, 1.7% last month. Even if you take out food and energy, it still went up at 0.3%. That's 3.6% annually in October. That was triple what Wall Street was expecting. The chickens are coming home to roost is the bottom line. And why? Because of these policies that were started by Reagan and continued by Bush. This leads directly to what happened with Kmart yesterday. I'll tell you about that right after this. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the Small Dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Which brings us to the greatest crime of the Reagan administration, aside from running the country into debt, running us off the edge into debt. We paid $160 billion this year, enough to put virtually every college student in America through college, through 4 years of college for free. We paid $160 billion this year just in interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed to make things look good so that he could win his second term in office. Similar strategy followed by George W. Bush, of course. But his bigger crime, in my opinion, was suspending enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which led to the mergers and acquisition frenzy, which led to things like, you know, the movie in which from which the phrase "greed is good" came, you know, and all that stuff. Michael Milken and all these guys, you know, these M&A specialists, right? And basically allowing big companies to get bigger and bigger and bigger and wiping out small companies all across America and leading to the destruction of small-town America, the destruction of the center cities, the destruction of small business, medium-sized businesses all across America. Now, post-Reagan, you can travel. But let me preface this. I remember in the 60s, there was when I was a kid, there was a TV show called Route 66. And these two guys, Martin Milner was one of them, I forget the name of the other, who traveled across the United States on Route 66. And every show, they were in a different city. And every city had its own unique diner and its own unique stores and its own unique business. And every city looked completely different. It had its own flavor. Now, post-Reagan, that was in the 60s, now post-Reagan, you travel from city to city in America, and you can always find the exact, not just you can find, you can't find anything but the exact same restaurants, the exact same retailers, the exact same banks even. It is the corporatization of America. But it's not just corporatization. It's the massive transnational corporatization of America that's so destructive. Let's take a couple of quick phone calls here. Pat in San Francisco has called in. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, by the way. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into the chat room. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Well, quite a bit. Good morning.
Good morning.
My husband and I traveled through the Bay Area, and while we were listening to the local radio, we tuned in to KGO Radio, Ray Taliaferro, this morning, and he had a caller that informed everyone about a website that seems to be quite informative in how everything is tied together with the little-known brother of President Bush. Have you heard of Marvin Bush?
Oh, yeah.
Of Marvin Bush.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Apparently...
have I ever. Go
pardon
ahead.
Me?
I said, have I ever. Go ahead, Pat.
Okay. He gave out... The caller gave a website called www.populist.com/03.02.Burns, B-U-R-N-S. And this article is quite lengthy and explains the tie that Marvin Bush played in. He was in the security position
yeah.
at Delta Airlines and everything.
Yeah,
Marvin
Bush, actually. Yeah, he owned one of the companies that was responsible for the security at the World Trade Center as well. Family lays a lot of this stuff out and lays it out very well. And it's not just Marvin. I mean, it's the whole, you know, as Mike Malloy refers to them as the Bush crime family. And in many ways, they do resemble that. Thanks for the call, Pat. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
During his 2002 State of the Union address, President George W. Bush said that running a national deficit was necessary, but could quickly and easily be reversed.
To win the war, protect the homeland, and revitalize our economy. Our budget will run a deficit that will be small and short-term so long as Congress restrains spending and acts in a fiscally responsible manner.
It appears that the Republican-controlled Congress have forgotten about that statement. the U.S. has hit its $7.38 trillion spending limit, but Congress is seeking to raise it to the tune of $650 billion. According to the Center for American Progress, the country actually hit that ceiling in October, but through a series of accounting tricks, Treasury Secretary John Snow was able to avoid breaching the limit. To avert the breach, Snow sent a letter to Congress on Wednesday announcing that he intends to suspend new investments in Treasury securities that would be credited to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund manages the financing and annual payments to retired federal employees and their families. The $650 billion increase to the credit limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting a squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says the Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail. Poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail.
Welcome back.
Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Kmart is buying Sears for $11.5 billion. What's the significance of that? I want to get to this. However, we've got some folks who've been on hold for quite some time, and I share their comments. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
Wanted to talk about the opening of the Clinton Presidential Library.
Yeah, in fact, some of the statistics that I was just quoting you from the Center for American Progress were kind of in memorial of the Clinton Presidential Library, or of his years, anyway.
Well, you know, the right-wingers, some of them, I heard a right-wing talk show host, who shall remain nameless, say he was glad it was raining there. You know, a really childish reaction, I would think, because, you know, it's just childish. But anyway, it's like comedian Bill Maher said, you know, some of these right-wingers don't want to relive the 8 years of horror of the Clinton administration, you know, all that peace and prosperity. Let's never go back there again.
Well, Rick, you know, part of the problem is that so many folks in politics, on the right, the left, the middle, I mean, although the Democratic Party is nothing to be talking about, are the issues and the future of this nation. You know, what's the best thing for America, whether it's my team or not? If the other team has a good idea, I'd be glad to listen to it. And it's just a shame that so many people are willing to, for example, trash Clinton just because he was a Democrat, or because he had the temerity of suggesting national health care or something like that. I mean, what specifically are the Republicans, what do they hate him about so much, well, other than the fact that he was popular?
Well, this is my question, and I know you've dealt in your other profession with people thinking to some extent, but I wonder how these right-wingers who have been conditioned, you know, mainly by a lot of talk show hosts, to hate Clinton, how they can process this through their minds that Bill Clinton invited President Bush, former President Bush, and, of course, President Carter is there, And I believe if Gerald Ford, I guess, can't make it, maybe for health reasons, I'm sure he would have been there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure President Nixon and President Reagan would have been there if they were still alive. You know, they would have been invited. And I wonder, how do these people process it through their minds that George Bush Jr., whom they revere, you know, is actually there? He has said nice things about President Clinton in the past. How do they process it through their minds that this guy that they adore so much says nice things about the guy they've been taught to hate?
Yeah, well, it's...
How does that work?
It doesn't work on right-wing talk radio, I can tell you.
No, but I mean with the people. How do the people process this through their minds?
I suspect that they just ignore it. You know, it's just part of the great denial process.
Is that called cognitive dissonance? Or
yeah, exactly. It's exactly what it's called, Rick.
I mean, I'm kind of an amateur psychologist. But
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, play one on TV. Rick, thanks for the call. It's a good point. It's a, you know, it's a well said. Keegan in Idaho on the line. Hey, Keegan, what's on your mind?
Well, Phil, I just wanted to make a comment or talk about your comment about the so-called Bush crime family. Wouldn't Clinton's actions his last few days in office maybe indicate him as part of the Rodham crime family?
You're talking about his pardons?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm assuming that Keegan that you're also that you're equally familiar. Keegan, I'm assuming that you're equally familiar with the pardons that George Herbert Walker Bush issued on his last day of office.
No, I am not.
Okay, then call back when you are, because I'm telling you, there's not much difference. You and I both can find a lot to criticize about what Bill Clinton did on his last day of office, and you will be horrified when you read the list of the pardons that George Herbert Walker Bush issued. The only difference is that you haven't been listening to right-wing talk radio for the last, 12 years, 16 years now, talk about George Herbert Walker Bush's pardons, but you have been listening to them talking about Bill Clinton's pardons. It's not to say that there's some, you know, wonderful moral equivalence, but, you know, come on, give me a break. Let's get to the real stuff here. 14 years after they slipped from their perch as America's top two retailers, writes the Wall Street Journal. Front page story today. Kmart to buy Sears for $11.5 billion. 14 years after they slipped from their perch as America's top two retailers, the much-diminished Kmart and Sears chains are merging in an $11.5 billion deal that will propel them back to the number two position. Now, what's going on here? What's going on is that we have lost the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Why? Intentionally. I mean, Ronald Reagan rolled it back, and no president since him has had the courage to take on these huge multinational corporations. And, in fact, Bill Clinton, here's one for you, Keegan, in Idaho. Bill Clinton even handed our sovereignty over to the multinational corporations, and we are paying for this right now, by the way, by getting us into NAFTA and GATT. You know, in NAFTA, under Article 11 of NAFTA, we can be sued by a private corporation. We, the people. Under GATT, under the World Trade Organization, which has as members corporations, can rule that our legislation is illegal. Now, wait a minute. It's illegal for there to be a law passed by our elected representatives? Well, sure enough, another story in today's Wall Street Journal: U.S. faces tariffs and EU into trade dispute. The European Union, this is an article by Scott Miller, the European Union plans punitive tariffs on a swath of politically sensitive U.S. products early next year, intensifying pressure on Congress to repeal illegal trade protection measures collectively dubbed the Byrd Amendment. Say what? Congress has to repeal illegal trade protection? I thought if our Congress passed something, it was a law, and therefore it was legal. You know, unless the Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional, which is a different thing. But no, because we are a member of the World Trade Organization, we no longer get to decide what is legal and what is illegal. Don't you find it odd that there's all these right-wingers running around yelling and screaming about the fact that we're members of the United Nations, and the United Nations has rules like you can't declare war on another nation unless they've attacked you first or you can prove to the world that they're about to. And they get all hysterical about this. But they have no problem with us being a member of the World Trade Organization, which says you can't protect your domestic industries, you can't protect small businesses, you can't protect the jobs of workers in your country, you have to surrender your national sovereignty to multinational corporations. Could it be a problem with us being a member of the World Trade Organization, which says you can't protect your domestic industries, you can't protect small businesses, you can't protect the jobs of workers in your country, you have to surrender your national sovereignty to multinational corporations? Could it be that the reason why is because the real conservative agenda is an economic one? That they toss out gay marriage and Christianity prayer in the schools to get the rabble worked up in a fairly cynical fashion, actually, because they never actually push those things, right? Abortion and all that. I mean, if they really, really, really wanted to change those laws, they've had lots of opportunities. No, they really don't want them changed. They want them to remain as issues so that they can keep people freaked out, so that they're not noticing what's really going on, which is the picking of the pockets of the American middle class by the conservative elite, by the billionaires for Bush. To continue the Walker remark, well, here the article goes on to say the WTO authorized the tariff after it ruled the Byrd Law violated international trade agreements and Congress failed to repeal the four-year-old legislation. Now, what is the Byrd Amendment? What is this law that is so onerous that the WTO has decided to kick our butts over it? The amendment offers protection, quoting the Scott Miller's article in the Wall Street Journal today, the amendment offers protection for U.S. companies that believe a foreign company is selling products in the U.S. at prices lower than those it charges in its own market. In other words, it's an anti-dumping law. But no, that's illegal now, the World Trade Organization has decided, because it may harm the profits of multinational corporations. Doesn't matter whether it's good for America or not. It just matters whether it's good for multinational corporations. Even as Congress faces pressure to repeal Byrd, writes the Wall Street Journal today, or notes the Wall Street Journal in this article by Scott Miller, it must grapple with rewriting yet another law the WTO has ruled illegal, one that grants U.S. companies the right to triple damages from foreign companies found to be dumping products in the U.S. Are we going to roll over? Well, yeah. Richard Mills, spokesman of the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, said the U.S. fully intends to comply with the WTO's ruling. You can lobby your senators and congressmen all day long. They can pass as many laws as they want. But if Walmart and General Electric and Mitsubishi decide that it ain't a good idea and the WTO strikes it down, or China, for that matter, doesn't like it, you and I are just tough out of luck. So now we've got Walmart being taken on by Kmart and Sears together. Is this a good thing? See, what you're seeing now is the inevitable results of absolutely unrestrained laissez-faire capitalism. And again, I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm not anti-business. In fact, I consider myself wildly pro-business. Because I believe in competition, and I believe that we must have the game of business arranged in such a way that small and medium-sized companies can actually compete, that they can actually participate in the marketplace, that they have a chance of surviving. But this post-Reagan notion... it's really a combination of two things. Part of it is the post-Reagan no longer enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and the other part of it is corporations claiming that although unions don't have human rights under the Bill of Rights, government doesn't have human rights under the Bill of Rights, churches don't have human rights under the Bill of Rights, that for-profit corporations do. You and me and for-profit corporations. And so JCPenney chain, way back when, 1936 I believe it was, sued the state of Florida because the state of Florida had the audacity to have laws on the books that made it more difficult for an out-of-state chain store to come in and wipe out small local businesses and in order to nurture and protect local businesses. And JCPenney came in, and they sued based on the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment is the Equal Protection Amendment. It was passed in July of 1868, after the Civil War, July 9th of 1868, and it was passed specifically, it was finally ratified, specifically to free the slaves. It says, no person shall be denied equal protection under the law. It does not say no corporation. It says no person. In fact, it starts out by saying every person who is born or naturalized in the United States is a citizen thereof. It establishes what it means by person. It's talking about human beings. But JCPenney said, no, we're a person too. And if Florida can have a law that allows communities to discriminate against us in favor of their local businesses, that's the same thing as discriminating against African Americans. Ironically, this was in the 30s, when discrimination against African Americans was legal in the South. But nonetheless, JCPenney came in and said, it's wrong, you can't keep us out. And the Supreme Court ruled, hey, you're right. And that's why you can't stop a Walmart, because they claim to be a person. They have civil rights. Give me a break. You combine that with Reagan's rolling back of the Sherman Antitrust Act, and what you have is a rush to the bottom for labor, for you and me, for the working class, for middle America, for, in fact, middle class America becomes the working poor. A return to the days of Scrooge and Marley, where Scrooge and Marley Incorporated owns the country, and the rest of us become Bob Cratchits, terrified that our tiny Tims may die because they don't have access to health care, they don't have good education. Who's going to pay for the Thanksgiving turkey or the Christmas turkey? And the big fish eat the middle-sized fish until there's nothing left but big fish. A new corporate aristocracy ruling not just the country, but through the WTO, ruling the world. The Wall Street Journal, in another story in the front page today, says the ringing endorsement the stock market gave the Kmart Sears deal yesterday may tell U.S. retailers that it's high time they shop for purchasers or partners themselves. In other words, get with the program, guys. If you're a small or medium-sized business, sell out. The big guys are coming, and you're going to be a dinosaur. This article by Ellen Byron and Justin Lehard notes, one reason for retailers' longtime reluctance to hitch up, experts say, is that they feared the stock market would disapprove, seeing such deals as the marriage of struggling companies merging out of desperation. The Kmart Sears deal and the euphoric stock market reaction, however, could change that. Kmart shares went up 7.7%, Sears went up 17%. Peter Solomon, an investment banker, says, this broke the logjam. Expect to see more mergers of big retailers. Expect to see the end of local business in your community. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's on your mind?
Well, in terms of these agreements, these trade agreements, when you were talking about it, there are two really obvious examples, one from Canada and one from where local or national laws were overturned because of their right to sue for loss of income.
Oh, absolutely. There was the funeral parlor case down in Louisiana, and the MTBE case, the lead case.
The MTBE was the one from the U.S. where California can't exclude this.
Yeah, no, there's been a bunch of them, Glenn. What's your point?
Well, it was just that it's just work. It's as if there's a super government.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's it, and it's the WTO. I absolutely agree with you. Let's say thanks for that call, Glenn. Let's go to Mark in Dallas. What's on your mind, Mark?
Hi, Tom. I just want to add some information on this outsourcing thing.
Okay, we got about 30 seconds.
4 weeks ago, I read an article in the Hindu Times. They did a survey of businesses outsourced 2005.
Right.
$212 billion for 2005. That equates to 3.5 million U.S. jobs gone.
There you go. 3.5 million U.S. jobs. Thank you, Mark, for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. I mean, this is the face of the new conservative worldview. Welcome to Bush World, my friends. You've got to get politically active. We've got to change Congress in 2 years.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from www.healin-holler.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinny Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is unfair.
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we was short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspend me because I throw away a plastic vegetables in the garbage. And on October 12th, they terminate me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland. When these were dismissed, Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just before our stock did tank, we sold and took it to the bank. The workers still got screwed. It was our intention to build the working dude right out of his pension. We're Enron. When Dick Cheney.
Welcome back. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jared in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jared, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I just had a couple random comments. Just talking about what
you were saying before you took the break, I totally agree with you that we need to get some help in Congress there. But to do that, you know, we need to straighten out the election system. So that's
There's that too.
That's my focus.
There's that too. We had Bev Harris on the show yesterday. I wrote up a piece about that today. Hopefully it'll get published today on CommonDreams.org and if not there somehow somewhere. But that's where I submitted it. And it will, we'll see. I mean, what's interesting, Jared, is that there is a small army of people out there now doing, double checking and on these voting machines, and whether it's going to be voting machine irregularities or whether it's just good old fashioned fraud, which it sort of looks like or implies that Bev may have discovered in Fallujah County, although the Fallujah County officials are saying, well, they just, they had duplicates of everything, and so what they threw into the trash were the duplicates. Time is going to tell. But I have a feeling that within a year, we're going to know more about all of this stuff, this whole stinking election mess, than we have known in the past decade as a result of all the previous elections.
Wow, that would be great.
Yeah, it would.
Another quick thought I had the other day. All this talk of trying to get the governor able to run for president got me thinking that if there are people trying to do that and they do amend the Constitution to do that, I think they should at the very least make people who are as old as the time that he's been in the country. People that age should be able to vote.
Yeah, what concerns me about Arnold is that he was in a secret meeting with Ken Lay during the California energy crisis with a whole bunch of energy companies, and they were basically setting up the job to stick it to the United States, to California specifically, and to make Gray Davis look bad. And he was in that meeting, and he has consistently refused to even discuss it. And, the people trying to investigate it when he was running for governor, he's absolutely sidestepped it. It seems to me that he's just another corporatist. He said, he would take money from corporations, but not from special interests, e.g. unions. Say what? I think he's a wolf in sheep's clothing, frankly. Or a wolf in bodybuilder's clothing. A wolf on steroids. But time will tell. Time will tell. It's the Tom Hartman Program in the vast radical middle.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
During his 2002 State of the Union Address, President George W. Bush said that running a national deficit was necessary, but could quickly and easily be reversed.
To win the war, protect the homeland, and revitalize our economy, our budget will run a deficit that will be small and short-term so long as Congress restrains spending and acts in a fiscally responsible manner.
It appears that the Republican-controlled Congress have forgotten about that statement. The U.S. has hit its $7.38 trillion spending limit, but Congress is seeking to raise it to the tune of $650 billion. According to the Center for American Progress, the country actually hit that ceiling in October, but through a series of accounting tricks, Treasury Secretary John Snow was able to avoid breaching the limit. To avert the breach, Snow sent a letter to Congress on Wednesday announcing that he intends to suspend new investments in Treasury securities that would be credited to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund manages the financing and annual payments to retired federal employees and their families. The $650 billion increase to the credit limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting a squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost 500,000 workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says the Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, 16% of those jobs went to blacks. Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
I've been chastised by Walmart. The largest corporation in the world apparently was stung by one of my recent commentaries. I'd pointed out that Walmart, which touts itself as a model of free market success, actually has built its market muscle in large part by milking us taxpayers, having squeezed more than $1 billion in subsidies from state and local governments, giving it a competitive advantage to clobber local businesses. In response, Sarah Clark, Director of Corporate Communications at Wally World, fired off a missive to media outlets that carried my Walmart commentary. She asserted that it was, quote, full of inaccuracies. Was the key figure of $1 billion in taxpayer giveaways to Walmart inaccurate? No, she did not dispute it. Rather, Walmart's chief PR flack tried to change the subject, offering numbers purporting to show that the company is a generous corporate citizen. In the past 10 years, Ms. Clark informs us, Walmart has paid $4 billion in property taxes alone. But wait, it owed those taxes. This was not a contribution, but a debt. Other businesses pay property taxes, too, yet they don't get $1 billion in special subsidies. Then Ms. Clark notes that her company, quote, generated $52 billion in sales taxes. But wait again, that's not Walmart's money. It's money that local consumers paid to finance public services. This money is also the result of sales that the monopolistic giant took from local businesses. Walmart doesn't expand a community's buying power. It just redistributes purchases from other stores to itself. But Ms. Clark presses on, claiming that Walmart has remitted $192 million in wage taxes. Once more, however, this money is not a voluntary contribution from a good-hearted company. It's taken out of the employee's wages, as required by law. This is Jim Hightower saying, to see the full report about how Walmart does indeed milk taxpayers, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
College loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called.
1-800, the number 2, college. It's the smartest call you can make.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here.
Lower your payments and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800, the number 2, college. It's the smartest call you can make.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear
best chance to defeat spammers, scammers, and hackers. Hey, Danny, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. Danny, first of all, before we get into this, did you write or were you in a book about Jim Morrison sometime many years ago?
Nope.
Okay.
Can't say that I was.
Okay. Must have been a different Danny Goodman. It's stuck in my head and I came to the program. Spammers. Spammers making money on our email addresses. One of the things that I've noticed is that every now and then, I have Zonalarm, you know, which is one of these little utilities that puts a firewall on your computer. And
That's good that you do.
Yeah, and whenever my computer is accessing the internet, you can see the little bars popping up and down on it. And sometimes when I open an email that is spam, I see this internet activity going on, even though I haven't responded to it. I've just opened it. Tell us what happens.
That's one of the first things that most people don't understand about email that comes in the form of it's called HTML, or it looks like a web page when you open the message and it has graphics and stuff. And what's happening is that these kinds of emails typically have HTML codes that are built in that go and retrieve images and sometimes even nastier things. So that the email message itself is relatively compact. It just has, you know, about, 20, 30 characters that can then go and fetch an image. And there's more to it than just fetching the image. Part of those characters and that retrieval action can also actually verify your email address to the spammer, confirming that that is, in fact, a live address, and boy, are they going to send you more.
You know, that's really interesting, because here's something that I discovered back, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, when we first were building, must have been longer than that, actually, when we were first building the website, TomHartman.com, and we have the internet service provider that we are, the web hosting company that we have that provides the web hosting, provides fairly detailed logs of who has looked at our site. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, people will forward to other people one of the pages off my website. And so they're opening that web page in email rather than clicking on it with a web browser. And what I noticed was that in my logs, in the logs that my ISP provide, or my web hoster company provides me, in those logs, if somebody came in, like with Internet Explorer or Mozilla or something like that, you know, a regular web browser, I can tell, what version of Windows or the Mac operating system they're using. I can tell what part of the country they're from. I can tell if they came in on DSL line, have dedicated ISP number. You can tell a lot about them. There's a lot of statistical information. But if
right,
it comes,
nothing about your personal information.
That's right. But if it comes from somebody having opened one of my web pages in email, then what I see instead of a referring website is I actually see the directory of their hard drive. It's mm-hmm. it says C/program/outlook/ whatever, and very often attached to that will be their name or their email address or something like that. I mean, it's just it was really quite shocking to me when I saw this, and that's when I got very cautious about opening email that I thought might be spam, and I probably have deleted a lot of well-intentioned emails from people who thought that they were coming up with cute subject lines, and I ended up not reading them because that was my first clue that spammers can actually, all you have to do is just read. You don't have to react. All you have to do is open the message.
You have a preview pane open in your email program, and it displays images. That's the same as opening the message and fetching that image. And so, if that image address is tagged with your email address, then that will confirm your address just even from the preview pane.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty startling stuff. I mean, it's really amazing how it's sort of like, you know, the 800 number thing. Most people don't know that if you call an 800 number anywhere in the United States, that the people who have that 800 number get a printout at the end of every month of every single inbound phone call. You know, call blocking or not, it doesn't matter. You get a list of every single phone call that called into it, which is much more effective than caller ID. And it's been like that for decades, which is why a lot of people advertise, you know, call this number for more information. And they really, you know, they're perfectly willing to give you the free information because when you call, they get your home phone number and then they can sell it. And the spammers are doing a variation on that, aren't they, Danny?
They are. But and there's also, speaking of the phone and the toll-free number, there's also a dark side to that, especially when it arrives from someone who's trying to scam you. It's probably not well known, but it is documented that it is possible to have an 800 number hooked up if you're a provider of some kind, so that when someone calls that number, it is then forwarded to a number that then you get charged for.
Right.
And very commonly, it's, you know, someplace in the Caribbean or someplace outside of the country that you're in,
yeah,
and you know, suddenly you wind up with a bill and your next phone bill that you don't understand, nor can you really have a chance to contest, because those kinds of things, unlike bogus credit card charges, bogus phone bill or charges like that are very difficult to get undone.
Right, and these are offshore companies, and while corporations have the right to enforce the laws from country to country, the WTO and whatnot, people like you and me don't.
That's right.
That's the bottom line. So what are the suggestions that you have? First of all, just dealing with this spam thing, what are the suggestions explicitly that you have for people to avoid having their email address captured by virtue of the fact that they have opened a spam message? And then, you know, now that these spammers know that it's a real email address, of course, they can resell it and make money on it, even if you don't never know it. What's your advice to people?
Well, there are several things you can do. One is the first thing I tell everyone to do is to close the preview pane if they're running Outlook or another
right.
email program. That
never use a preview pane.
As a preview pane. Or if your email program allows you to disable the display of, or download of images in messages, then I also always suggest that. Because
right.
even if it's the download of the message, or of the image, rather, that causes the problem.
Right.
However,
now,
there are also other things that can be downloaded, including worms and viruses and other
sure.
things, especially if you're on a Windows kind of machine, that come in the same way.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty straightforward stuff. You know, don't have a preview pane. You know, don't open it if you're suspicious of it. And if you can set now, is there a way to enable Outlook? This is the most widely used program out there. Is there a way to set up Outlook so that it will open even HTML messages in ASCII? I haven't been able to find a way to do it.
Yeah, I'm not an Outlook user, although I troll around with it a little bit, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I've seen one installation, and it may be for more professional installations, where they get a list of their email, and it's a kind of preview, but it's a list with just the plain text,
right,
or the first few lines of the plain text,
right.
Listed.
Yeah, that would be a great thing. But again, I don't see it in Outlook. Okay,
yeah.
let's move along, Danny. We've got about 4 minutes here. Your PC is likely spying on your web activity and snatching your passwords. You say?
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
If there is a raft of spyware that has been installed on so many PCs around the world. You know, it's estimated, you know, just millions of PCs have been infected, and they come in through, you know, things that you're enticed to, you know, put in some special toolbars for your For your browser, or some cursors, or sounds, or some games.
Screensavers, yeah. You know, in fact, Danny, we bought a new computer here for our office. It was just a cheapie, you know, recently. And the first thing I did was I put SpyBot on it, you know, SpyBot
right.
Search and Destroy, and ran it. And this was a program. This is a computer that had not yet been hooked up to the internet. You know, the first thing I did when I hooked it up to the internet was put SpyBot on it. And SpyBot found about 30 pieces of spyware that came installed on this computer when I bought it.
And it's also, now depending on what your firewall situation, it's also possible that your computer may have been probed in the time it took you to download spyware and install it and run it, that your PC had been probed through its IP address and had been actually infected that way as well.
Yeah, but with some of my, most of them were actually attached to various vendor programs that had been, you know, this computer manufacturer no doubt was paid to put on the hard drive. You know,
right?
But
it's scary stuff.
Yeah. So what do people do about this?
Well, you need to run not just spyware, search and destroy, but the other programs like there's one called AdAware. I've yet to see one of these programs that will do the whole job.
Yeah.
And even running multiple ones, you may not get everything. There's some of these spyware installations are so insidious that they almost require wiping your drive and starting, you know, installing everything from scratch again.
Remarkable. Nigerian spammers. Now they've moved out of Nigeria. Actually, I've seen a few recently from other places. You know,
right.
Dear sir, I am the nephew of the Prince of Bahrain or whatever, and we've got $70 million, and you can have 10% of it if you'll just give us your checking account number. I actually have a friend who person of some intelligence who I respect, who actually gave these people his information, his bank account.
I'll tell you, there's some very sad stories. There was a retired gentleman in Florida who ended up giving him, mortgaging his house to give, you know, over $300,000. There was a professor in Switzerland who gave a couple hundred thousand. The businessman in Germany, $1.6 million. It's all a promise that, you know, you give them these things to sort of take care of these fees, and you're supposed to get this big reward in the end. But then, anytime you're asked to give money up front for anything, forget it.
Yeah, if it's too good to be true, it is.
The same with these lotto scams. I mean, you'll say you get them that they say you won this lotto somewhere in the Netherlands or Spain or someplace, and what you'll end up doing is sending all kinds of money, purportedly for fees and taxes, but you'll never see anything.
Danny, what's your take on this whole issue of we can eliminate spam if we got the post office, for example, and Microsoft has actually tried to play this role. But let's say we did it with the post office into the email business, where every time you send an email, it costs a tenth of a penny or a penny or whatever. The problem with that is that it would limit the incredible free speech of email. People, you know, it's become the new pamphleteering. But the upside is it would make it more expensive for spammers, and they would be less likely to be into the business. In the final 30 seconds we've got here, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that sounds good for about a half a second, and then you realize who would manage it, who would collect the fees, who would get the criminals who are sending all this stuff to pay those fees.
Right.
It's unworkable.
It's just unworkable. Yeah, that was my sense of it as well. And it's just we just have to put up with it and get our anti-spam software and anti-spyware software more sophisticated. The book Spam Wars by Danny Goodman, are Lemmers, Scammers, and Hackers. Great book. Check it out. Thanks, Danny, for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We say we build democracy, but really build refineries and drill for our prosperity from oil in the ground. The earth just might be.
And welcome back, my friends. Le proletariat in our chat room says, all these PC people are all hysterical about their viruses and their email won't work and this and that and the other thing. The solution, get a Mac. Yeah. Which causes me to remind you, our program today brought to you in part by Small Dog Electronics, the nation's premier Macintosh dealer, although they do carry all sorts, anything computer. You can give them a call and they will be able to help you out. High technology for low prices. Their telephone number, 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS. Give them a shout and tell them hi from the Tom Hartman program. It's 25 minutes past the hour, and Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, what's on your mind and what's happening there?
All kinds of stuff going on in the Senate. It looks like they are looking at Ben Nelson from Nebraska to take over the Ag Department. Of course, he's a very conservative Democratic senator, and that would also probably open another full seat for the Republicans in Nebraska, which then increases, it's a win-win situation for the Bush administration.
In Nebraska, isn't he from Colorado?
Ben Nelson?
Yeah.
I'm, Nebraska.
You do Nebraska. Okay, I'm wrong. I don't track these guys as carefully as you do. Okay.
Yeah. So that would be a total win-win for the Bush administration, because they'd probably get another seat in the Senate.
So is he going to go with it? Is he going to go for it?
Well, he won't comment.
Huh. Interesting.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Other things that are happening is that the Democrats are now saying that they are going to sort of pick their battles in terms of confirmation hearings, and it looks like they are probably going to pass over Gonzales as making a huge issue of it at this point.
Right.
But they also may try to ask questions that would be used against him if he if they decided to nominate him to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Now, Senator Spector is basically being challenged, as you know, by the conservatives, and he said that he's going to give a written pledge that he will not hold a litmus test in terms of the choice issue, and that he would also draft a letter that would promise quick hearings and votes on the president's judicial nominees. And then there is a leadership position in terms of the Senate, Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. There is a fight on that between Elizabeth Dole and Norm Coleman of Minnesota. Well, it's interesting. There has been now Ted Stevens of Alaska has said, well, let's split it. Let's have Elizabeth Dole in charge of fundraising and Norm Coleman in charge of actually running the organization. And that's interesting because, one, Norm Coleman does not have the ability to do probably as much fundraising.
Well, hang on just a second. Ellen, which organization are we talking about?
The Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
What's fascinating about that is Elizabeth Dole would not run the organization because she has a horrible reputation in Washington, D.C., in terms of being an organization person. She ran two cabinet offices and the Red Cross, and they were all a disaster zone when she left.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, they're trying to come up with this. And Arlen Specter has been apparently neutered, right?
Very much neutered. He shouldn't have opened his big trap.
Yeah, yeah. He's boy, that's incredible. Any interesting hearings? We got just a few seconds left here.
Well, I think they're, you know, the most interesting thing that's sort of going on is the energy and water bill. It may not seem terribly interesting to you, but this has to do with that whole issue on Utica Mountain, what's happening there. And Harry Reid now, of course, he's the minority leader, and he is determined to not let that go into the bill.
So we need to stay tuned on that. Ellen, thanks for the update. Great to hear from you. Okay, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In news service, I'm Jesse Russell.
End the war, protect the homeland, and revitalize our economy. Our budget will run a deficit that will be small and short-term so long as Congress restrains spending and acts in a fiscally responsible manner.
It appears that the Republican-controlled Congress have forgotten about that statement. The U.S. has hit its $7.38 trillion spending limit, but Congress is seeking to raise it to the tune of $650 billion. According to the Center for American Progress, the country actually hit that ceiling in October, but through a series of accounting tricks, Treasury Secretary John Snow was able to avoid breaching the limit. To avert the breach, Snow sent a letter to Congress on Wednesday announcing that he intends to suspend new investments in Treasury securities that would be credited to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund manages the financing and annual payments to retired federal employees and their families. The $650 billion increase to the credit limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting a squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says the Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, 16% of those jobs went to blacks. Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home.
More fallout from the war in Iraq. Yeah, when the foghorn... This ill-advised, unnecessary, impractical, poorly planned, poorly executed, no plan to get out, disastrous invasion of a country that represented no threat to us at all. Here now we have Colin Powell today, talking about Iran. And, of course, the way that this is fallout is twofold. First of all, most of the world has figured this out. Most Americans are clueless. Certainly nobody on right-wing talk radio is going to talk about it. The mass media isn't talking about it. But I don't think that this is conspiracy theory. I mean, it's just fairly obvious. Ahmed Chalabi, the guy who basically kept pumping the neocons and saying, just go into Iraq. Don't worry. Everything's going to be just fine. The Iraqi people will love you. They will welcome you with flowers. They will, you know, throw candy at you. Everything's just going to be great. Ahmed Chalabi, it turns out, was passing to the Iranian intelligence service secrets that he was learning from the CIA back when the CIA was paying him $340,000 a month to work for them. And, of course, that's why when he was under attack in Iraq, when, you know, some of the stuff came out, he fled to Iran. So Iran had had this long war with Iraq. The mullahs hated Saif. He allowed them to, they didn't have to wear burqas, or they didn't even have to wear headscarves. Again, I'm not saying Saddam was some kind of great guy. I mean, you know, the guy was a maniacal dictator. But from the point of view of the Iranians, he was evil incarnate because he was ruling a state that was 60% Shia Muslims are in a secular fashion. And so they basically, you know, through Chalabi, they got us to do their dirty work. They couldn't defeat Saddam. They lost a million people trying to do it. So they got us to do it. We were suckers for Iran. Surprise, surprise. And now Colin Powell, so we've lost our credibility, right? The world now, you know, when Colin Powell holds up a little vial in the UN, the world starts to snicker. Because literally every single one, the world starts to snicker. because literally every single one of the charges, the 37, as I recall it was, specific charges that Colin Powell made against Iran proved not to be true. And all of the things that the United Nations weapons inspectors and the IAEA inspectors were saying, Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei, all the things that these guys were saying turned out to be true. They were saying, hey, there's nothing there. And the rest of the world was saying, you know, we don't think there's anything there. We're not ready to sign off on a resolution to declare war against Iraq. And international law, by the way, for any country that's a signatory of the United Nations, requires the United Nations to sign off on a war unless you've been attacked. And so, you know, they said, America, if you attack Iraq without us authorizing it, it's a war crime. Which is why Canada is now debating whether or not they should arrest George Bush when he shows up later this year. Iran made such suckers of us. Secretary of State Colin Powell said. Powell partially confirmed claims by an Iranian opposition group. Now, does that sound familiar? Because Powell was earlier confirming claims by Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress, an opposition group. Now, this is an Iranian, not an Iraqi opposition group. It's actually this opposition group is listed in the United States, by the way, as a terrorist group. It's called the National Council for Resistance in Iran. But nonetheless, Powell is quoting them as saying that Tehran is deceiving the United Nations. He said on Wednesday to reporters yesterday, as he was traveling to the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Santiago, Chile, he said, I have seen intelligence which would corroborate what this dissident group is saying, and it should be of concern to all parties, end quote. Now, he did say, you know, to his credit, I suppose, there was no evidence to suggest that Iran had developed the technology to make a nuclear weapon. But instead, he says, they're working to adapt their missiles to accept nuclear weapons. This is, and by the way, this Iran apparently got the ability to do this, if in fact they have it, from Abdul Qadir Khan. Remember Mr. Khan? He was the, Mr. Bomb in Pakistan. And he sold this intelligence information to North Korea and to Iran. And he's still walking around loose. He got a get-out-of-jail-free card from Musharraf in Pakistan. Nobody's exactly sure why. What does he have on them or on us? There's a lot of speculation about that, but that's a whole other story. Anyhow, Powell declined to comment on Khan, the article says. Yes. The article then adds, Iran said his sole interest is to generate nuclear fuel through low-level enrichment. They currently have about 1,000 centrifuges. They would need another 500 or so in order to make one bomb a year. So you got to put this uranium in a centrifuge, spin it around really, really fast, and the heavier elements, which are the more radioactive of the isotopes, then, you know, work their way down to the bottom, and as the centrifuge is spinning around by virtue of artificial gravity, centrifugal force. And it takes a lot of centrifuges running at high speeds for long periods of time, for years, to filter out, you know, to separate out that heavier uranium and the heavier fissionable elements like plutonium. So they're not there yet, but they're working on it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Anyhow, this is the fallout from the war in Iraq. This idiotic war that George Bush got us into is that if there is a real problem with Iran, I don't think the world is going to believe Colin Powell for a minute. And that's a shame. That's a real shame. Alan in Dallas, Texas on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Yes, when our military went into Iraq and it was completely obvious that it was just an exaggeration about the WMDs, what I thought, and I told a friend of mine, is that we're going to be sued in international court for a long time because people are still suing Germany over World War II. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And there's a lot of discussion about it in the international community. In Belgium, there was an attempt, actually, by a Belgian group to, under Belgian law, to prosecute George W. Bush as a war criminal and to seek some sort of reparations on behalf of the Iraqi people. The Belgian government, under pressure from the United States, dismissed the suit in court, and then changed the law and changed it retroactively, which a lot of people say you can't quite do, but they did. Right now, it's being held together by the fact that we're the big dog on the block. The Bush has the big stick. He's got all the nuclear weapons. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of power. We have a few allies. That's the only thing that's holding it together. But how much longer it'll hold it together? Anybody's guess. And if Bush looks like he's weak, or if the United States starts to fall apart economically as a result of Bushonomics, it could be a real mess. And of course, down the road, once Iraq has a functioning government and they have kicked us out, which, you know, mark my words, they will try to do if they have a truly independent government. Because this is what Iran wants. They want Iraq to have votes, because if the Iraqis vote, they will vote for a Shiite theocracy, or at least for repatriation of their losses. They'll say, hey, you know, you destroyed our businesses, you killed our people, you took our oil. We want some money for that. And, good point, Alan. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. It's a real issue. It just hasn't quite come to a head yet. It would be interesting. I did read the Iraqi Constitution back, 6-8 months ago, a year ago, whenever it was that it got passed. In fact, I read portions of it to you here on the air, the portions that remolded Iraq in the form of a libertarian utopian state that is a corporatist state. I don't recall that there's anything in there that prevents them from suing us, but, you know, it's entirely possible. In fact, just on our message board, this is just a good discussion. You go to TomHartmann.com and you can go to our message board, which is where you can have conversations with people not in real time like in the chat room, which is also, you know, full of great folks, but also the message board. You can post a message, and there's some 40,000 messages there going back years. And although we try to prune it down to about a year to 18 months. But anyhow, the first piece that was posted in this thread, it was called The Good Guys was the topic. And Mark 255 posts this, and he goes, murder, and then he says an expletive about war, rape, an expletive about war, arrogance. He says, the United States is supposed to be the good guys. Yesterday, the husband of a co-worker of my wife, on his second tour of duty in Iraq, was killed. And then he says, you know, screw war and all its brothers. And then Thomas replies to him. He says, I hear you, brother. This is burning my head as well. Lately, I'm forced to think about and remember things from 35 years ago. He says, I'm mind-boggled, particularly by the apparent willingness of much of my generation to do this to another generation of Americans for such flimsy excuses, such a shameful waste of those, with the least to gain from this bloody adventure in colonial conquest. He says, how else can we win back America for Americans? The America many of us once were genuinely proud of before it became the corporate states of America. And then detergent insurgent jumps in, says, Thomas and Mark, I too am at a loss over Iraq. Because I am a totally disabled, service-connected Vietnam veteran, that war is still with me every day. I thought I had dealt with it until our clueless leader invaded Iraq. What really angers me is that the same class of people serving, dying, and being maimed are those who did so in Vietnam. The Chicken Hawks, including our draft-dodging president and vice president, have a video view of war in which they never served. The reality of war is very different than the patriotic stereotype of brave troops serving valiantly. Yes, soldiers must be brave and valiant, but they must also be willing to die in what is the undescribable horror of any war. That is the reality of the rah-rah flag wavers ignore. That they ignore. It is not glory, it is death, and it stays with you for the rest of your life. And the thread goes on. It starts talking about this 20-year-old kid who shot this Iraqi, and basically, somebody else, Foster, another member, says, I picture a 20-year-old kid trying to grow up, and the next thing he knows, he's in Iraq. Then, after days of little sleep and unimaginable stress during the raid on Fallujah, he loses it for 1 second. Split-second bad decision given circumstances that most of us can't even imagine. Now he's the bad guy in a video, and his life is ruined. The ones who got us into this mess should be on trial for this, not some poor kid. Bush and his crew set in motion circumstances which guaranteed that something like this would happen. And then two great quotes. I'll just wrap it up with that. The thread goes on. It's a fascinating thread. William Tecumseh Sherman, good old General Sherman. Quote from him. There is many a boy here today who looks on war as all glory, but boys, it is all hell. And, of course, George Santayana. I never could pronounce his last name. Santayana. Anyway, those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. the Chinese are losing faith in the dollar. Another startling little note. Let's get to that after we take a call from Robert in Washington, D.C. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Two things, not that you're going to talk about China, too, is I was wondering what you think about China and Iran's new alliance, their increasing trade between each other.
Yeah, to supply oil and natural gas to China from Iran.
Right.
The Chinese have been pretty upfront and have been for a decade. I mean, the last time I was in China was in the late, wrote about this in 96 in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. They were talking then, I mean, there was talk then in China about how the next century, the 21st century, would be the Chinese century. It would be the century that China ended up being the major power on Earth. And in my mind, they're still working in that direction. I see China as a very significant threat to democracy and to the United States. And now, you know, here again, this is in my stack. I haven't gotten to it yet. The Bush administration sucking up again to China vis-a-vis Taiwan. You know, telling Taiwan, yes, we realize you're a democracy, but we have business relationships, at least Walmart does, and they give a lot of money to us Republicans, with China. So, you know, stop talking about independence, please.
Right. And, the other quick thing is I'm originally from Lansing, Michigan, and I want to tell my father to listen to you. Do you know what radio station you're on in that area?
In Lansing, you can't hear us on a radio station. We're on WTKG in Grand Rapids and WSDS in Ann Arbor, and Lansing's kind of halfway in between, so he would have to listen on the Internet.
Oh, okay.
So, or Sirius Satellite Radio carries the first hour of the program live and the second and third hour time-delayed later on in the evening.
Okay, so, great.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Robert. Good to hear from you. And, you know, maybe one of these days we'll be on in Lansing, but step by step we are, you know, growing, as they say. The long lunch hour lines at this city, this is in Shanghai, at Shanghai's Downtown Bank of China are filled with people who not long ago were stuffing their accounts with U.S. currency. Now they are dumping dollars, reports Peter Wanakot in today's Wall Street Journal article called Chinese Are Losing Dollar Faith. Yuan Mon, ticket number 252 in line, has set aside more than $50,000 to support his son's dream to study in the U.S., blah, blah, blah. But now he's cashing in his dollars and buying yuan. Y-U-A-N, the one, the Chinese currency. Why? The dollar doesn't mean anything anymore, says one of the people in line to change in their dollars. Chinese, average Chinese and Chinese business people are dumping dollars frenetically right now. Because George Bush got elected, everybody sees what his economic policy has done to the United States. Gold is going through the roof, oil is going through the roof, the euro is going through the roof. What all that really means is that the dollar is going through the floor. He's driving us into poverty. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this at progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In the presidential elections, nearly 90% of African Americans cast their vote for Senator John Kerry. But with President Bush back in the White House, African Americans are looking to the local level to push for change. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
Both presidential campaigns focused on the war in Iraq, terrorism, and keeping America safe. Many in the black community adamantly oppose the occupation of Iraq. They say it's a war based on lies and profiteering. African-American opposition to the war is also strong because it disproportionately affects minorities, as most enlistees are low-income people of color.
A Republican Party who diametrically opposes everything New York families are all about.
New York City Councilmember Charles Barron, whose motto is that all politics are local, stresses that unemployment is rising, the Section 8 housing program is shrinking, and school funding continues to go unfulfilled. 50% of black males are unemployed in New York City. Councilmember Barron says that the policy of shrinking government shrinks employment, as 60% of black and Latino work in the public sector.
You got to listen to these code words, that we're going to shrink government. We're going to make sure that we privatize more of the public sector, even things like the faith-based initiatives that is taken away from social institutions that the government provided and given it to these private religious groups.
A major program that President Bush will push in his next 4 years is the privatization of Social Security. This would have a doubly negative impact on the black communities who aren't large contributors to the stock market. And with unemployment rates so high, many don't have money to set aside for 30 years down the road. Leaders in the black community say they'll continue voter registration drives and push to get more people of color elected to public office in the next 4 years. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I want to live. I want to kill. I've been a miner for a heart of gold.
It's just amazing to me how the Wall Street Journal can just kind of tell the truth and nobody. Well, you know, the ruling class, as it were, they understand. Yeah, they understand. Here, this article, Peter Wanakut's article, Chinese are losing dollar faith. The U.S. government, while rhetorically calling for a strong dollar, has been quietly acceding to the good dollar slide on global currency markets amid steep budget and trade deficits. In other words, Bush's economic and trade policies, his tax policies and his trade policies, are driving us into bankruptcy. And they just say it. Right here in the Wall Street Journal, they just essentially say it. I mean, not in the words that I would use, but the U.S. government, while rhetorically calling for a strong dollar, has been quietly acceding to the dollar slide on global currency markets amid steep budget and trade deficits. They note the euro yesterday hit a new high against the dollar. As well, China's foreign exchange reserves reached $514 billion at the end of September. Increasing by about $12 billion a month. Are they going to continue to want to have these many dollars? I somehow doubt it. In fact, at a closed-door meeting in Shanghai this month, banking regulators expressed concern about these developments, notes Wanakot in the Wall Street Journal. Foreign reserves are increasing too quickly, as say the minutes of the meeting. A lot of capital is getting in through the black market, betting on the yuan. People are betting on the Chinese currency. Somebody in our, one of the folks in our chat room said, we need to go back to Howard Beale.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, with the death of the middle class at the hands of conservative economics, the destruction of our manufacturing base in the hands of neocon utopianists, these Limbaugh-Frist Bush bunch who believe that, oh, the free market will cure everything. If you just leave everything to the market, just let the big corporations get as big as they want, as powerful as they want, turn the sovereignty of the United States over to them. Let's just hand the whole thing to them. Let them decide which of our laws are actually legal and which are not. And what happens? Well, what happens is you go back to the days of Scrooge and Marley Incorporated and Bob Cratchit and his family. The direction that we are headed under this administration. And the only way it's going to change is if enough of us wake up and enough of us speak out. Politics isn't something you do for 6 months before the campaign. It's something you do all the time. Wake up your friends. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
During his 2002 State of the Union Address, President George W. Bush said that running a national deficit was necessary, but could quickly and easily be reversed.
To win the war, protect the homeland, and revitalize our economy, our budget will run a deficit that will be small and short-term so long as Congress restrains spending and acts in a fiscally responsible manner.
It appears that the Republican-controlled Congress have forgotten about that statement. The U.S. has hit its $7.38 trillion spending limit, but Congress is seeking to raise it to the tune of $650 billion. According to the Center for American Progress, the country actually hit that ceiling in October, but through a series of accounting tricks, Treasury Secretary John Snow was able to avert the breach. Snow sent a letter to Congress on Wednesday announcing that he intends to suspend new investments in Treasury securities that would be credited to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund managed financing and annual payments to retirement limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting a squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost 500,000 workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says that Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, 16% of those jobs went to blacks. Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Here's today's multiple choice quiz. Dick Cheney is 1, loopy, 2, churlish, 3, thuggish, 4, dangerous, or 5, all of the above. Choose the combo. We saw all of these uglies come out in Cheney the day after the election. John Kerry had barely finished his concession speech when Dick seized the national microphone to growl that the Bushites had not only taken the victory, but also won a mandate. So get ready, world, here they come. A mandate? They barely got 51% of the vote, meaning 49% of the people voted to toss them out on their duffs. A 2% margin is to mandate what near beer is to beer. Also, both pre-election polls and exit polls showed clearly a big chunk of people voting for George W. were actually strongly opposed to his agenda. So why did they choose him? Some were simply voting against Kerry. Some said they were voting against gays, and some were vaguely voting for Bush's, quote, moral values. But a majority of voters said they definitely opposed such specifics as Bush's tax cuts for the rich, his handling of the economy, and his war of lies in Iraq. Despite the public's real desires on national policies, however, the Bush gang is gearing up to ram through an extremist agenda supported only by their ideological cohorts and corporate benefactors. Among his priorities, granting trillions of dollars in permanent tax giveaways to the rich, replacing the progressive income tax with a totally regressive national sales tax, launching the privatization of Social Security, expanding the USA Patriot Act, and extending Bush's Iraqi war into Iran. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Bushites have no mandate for this mugging. To get information and help fight their power grab, call Campaign for America's Future, 202-955-5665.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Calling
for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Typing away there in the chat room. Just had a conversation with Bev Harris, our erstwhile, well, not ours, I mean, she's her own, Black Box Voting, while voting investigator. She's off to a new county. She says she's got some juicy information for us. We'll be sharing that with you tomorrow, in all probability. But, interesting stuff going on. Usually where Bev goes, interesting events follow. So we've been talking here for the last couple of hours about the Bush administration basically giving away the United States to, largely to China. China, you know, Walmart, if it was a country, would be China's eighth largest trading partner. I believe that we are their largest. So this is not just Walmart. It's, you know, Kmart and Sears now are merging so that they can compete with Walmart. And what are they going to compete at with Walmart at? Largely importing stuff from China and selling it to us. And the consequence of this is the wiping out of the American middle class. Just, you know, the wiping out of the it's just, you know, very simple and very straightforward. And in the process also, we've given up our sovereignty to the World Trade Organization. You know, it's so funny. The right-wingers complain about the United Nations. We're no longer a sovereign power. The United Nations can prevent us from declaring war on somebody. It becomes a war crime if you attack a country unprovoked. Well, I think most of us think that it should be a war crime if a country attacks another country unprovoked. You know, those are treaties that I think most rational folks would sign on to. But how about treaties that say that a multinational corporation can sue you, can sue your nation for damages, for lost profits, because your nation is just trying to protect the health of its citizens? Yes, this has happened under Chapter 11 of NAFTA. Corporations in Mexico and Canada have sued governments in the United States, both local and state and federal. And is, you know, who wants to sign up for that? Here we've got the situation where you've got basically multinational corporations now making the rules. And the European Union is saying that we've got to undo the Byrd Amendment. Robert Byrd got this amendment passed to a spending bill that says that this was 4 years ago, that says if a nation is selling things in the United States below the price that they sell them in their own country, that we can impose tariffs. We can say, okay, before you bring it in the United States, that we're going to tax this thing up to the price that you sell it in your own country at. You can't dump things here in the United States, in other words. And the World Trade Organization, with heavy input from the multinational corporations, have said, sorry, you can't have that law. Yes, we know it was passed by a majority of your legislators who were elected by your people. And you think you have a government that you own and control, and that your government has sovereignty, and that you can make it legal. You think that there, you Americans. And isn't that cute that you think that? But in fact, the World Trade Organization says, you can't have that law. And so right now in Congress, in all probability, attached to the omnibus spending bill that is going to be, you know, it's good by the end of this, probably by tomorrow, at the earliest, the first or second day of next week, going to be passed through Congress, in order to raise the debt ceiling and keep the government functioning. Probably, maybe even this afternoon. I mean, it might have happened by now. I haven't seen a news ticker in about 2 hours here. But the House and Senate are going to pass a rollback, a repeal of the Byrd Amendment. Why? Because the multinational corporations that wag the dog of the WTO have said, we don't like that. It makes us less profitable. Who cares if it helps America? Who cares if it protects American jobs? We don't like that, they say. And China now is saying to us, and this is, you know, talking about adding insult to injury. China is now saying to us, you know, all this talk about democracy, you know, that you're going to, democracy's on the march. Remember George Bush's theme?
Democracy's on the march in Iraq.
well, setting aside the legitimate argument about the possibility that, or in Afghanistan today, you know, the report that Afghanistan is now the number one narco state in the world, supplying 80% of the world's heroin. 1 out of 10 Afghanis are involved in the opium trade, and it accounts for about half of the total gross national product of Afghanistan. You know, behind oil and gas. The you know, pipeline stuff. And construction and whatnot. And it's... But, you know, for all of George Bush's talk about democracy's on a march, the democracy of Taiwan... We're telling them, hey, quit talking about democracy. It's upsetting the Chinese. This in today's Wall Street Journal. Article by Murray Hibbert and or Hebert in Washington and Jason Dean in Taipei. U.S. approach to Taiwan is set to be tougher. Tougher approach to Taiwan. Tough about what? About talking about democracy. This from our Democracy is on the March guys. The Taiwan issue, writes Hebert and Dean, the Taiwan issue along with North Korea's nuclear capabilities and China's currency policy will be a central topic this weekend when Mr. Bush meets with Chinese President Hu Jintao at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Chile. Mr. Bush began his first term in office with a historic weapons offer to Taiwan and a vow to do whatever it takes to help the island defend itself, moves that angered Beijing. During the past year, Washington has used a series of public and private admonishments to check Taiwanese President Chen Shui-bian's moves toward formal independence for the island. You'll recall it was in 1949, during the last Chinese Civil War, that Chiang Kai-shek and his merry band did not succeed in bringing their Western sphere of influence aligned revolutionary, counter-revolutionary, I suppose you could say, against Mao, or maybe counter-revolutionary, whatever. They failed. And they fled China to Taiwan, to this island off the coast of China. It used to be called Formosa when I was a kid growing up. And or it must have been before that, because I was born after 49, and the Civil War was in 49. I'm not sure when they changed the name of Taiwan. But in any case, they went to Taiwan, and they said, okay, we're going to set up a government. And it was originally a fairly authoritarian government. Chiang Kai-shek was a bit of a dictator, shall we say, sort of in the model of Singapore. But over time, it has become a democracy. And notes the Wall Street Journal today, the current U.S. approach seems to be having some effect. The approach being, you know, please don't talk about democracy so much. George can say democracy on the march in his campaign stumps, but in the real world, please don't talk about democracy. Mr. Chen's, quoting again from the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Chen's narrow re-election in March after a campaign heavy on anti-China rhetoric heightened tensions with Beijing. Since then, Mr. Chen has towed a relatively moderate line. Last month, Taiwan, Chen again came out and said, we're an independent nation. We're a democracy. And Colin Powell rushed over there and said, no, you're not. Or maybe you are, but don't talk like that. In fact, here, the Wall Street Journal, Secretary of State Colin Powell last month pointedly rebutted Taiwan's frequent claim that it already is sovereign and independent. In an interview this week, the senior U.S. official didn't back off those remarks, saying they were factually true and suggesting that they could be repeated. China, meanwhile, has bluntly rejected Mr. Chen's overtures and continues to warn about the possibility of war. We are making China rich by laws that make it possible, by pushing through laws that make it possible for Walmart to inhale local communities. Or let's flip that around and say it the way it really is. By by striking down laws that communities across the United States have historically had for the last 200 years that allow them to protect their local businesses and their local industries from predatory practices of out-of-state corporations or transnational corporations. And we have been systematically dismantling these laws ever since 1936, the JCPenney versus State of Florida case before the Supreme Court, where JCPenney claimed that because they were a person, it was illegal discrimination for Florida to have laws that made it harder for out-of-state corporations to do business in Florida than in-state corporations to protect their domestic economy. So here we have friends of Taiwan in Washington say the U.S. need for Chinese help on curbing North Korea's nuclear weapons program and other issues could lead to more U.S. pressure on Taiwan. And see, I would say it may have something to do with North Korea. It's got everything to do with Walmart. You know, the whole North Korean issue, that is not the nexus of political power in the United States. The nexus of political power in the United States is fundraising for the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for that matter. But in large part, you see the funds for the Republican Party coming from the Walmarts of the world and the big financial companies and, you know, on and on it goes. This is going to result in more pressure on Taiwan, says the Wall Street Journal. These issues, quote, demand a good working relationship with China and mean that Taiwan will have to learn to sit down and shut up, end quote. This is from Mike Font, an advisor in Washington to Mr. Chen's Democratic Progressive Party. This is the party, the ruling party now in Taiwan. We are sucking up to dictatorships that are responsible for mass murder. Yes, China is responsible for mass murder and the imprisonment of anybody who dares talk about democracy. And we're telling the Democratic Republic of Taiwan, no, you can't talk about democracy. It ain't on the march. It's just a campaign slogan. John in Boston on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
How are you?
Great.
I listen to you every day, and I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
You've been talking about Bev Harris.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say I think that she should be releasing all of the information that she receives right away.
She is, as because, fast as she can.
Yeah, because, you know, I think back to when Dorothy Kilgallen talked to Jack Ruby.
Yeah.
You remember what happened to her?
She died very quickly.
You know, I really do not trust the people that are running this government now. I really don't. And I just want all of the...
Bev gave me a pile of information yesterday. We talked about a lot of it on the air today. I wrote up a piece and submitted it to Common Dreams last night. I updated it this morning with some new information. And, you know, hopefully they'll publish it. And, you know, those of us who believe in the work that she's doing are trying to promote it.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you.
We'll keep promoting what she's doing. And, John, thanks for listening there in Boston, and thanks for calling in. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, is our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We gave millions to make you president. Hear the chance to pay us back. The inheritance tax makes my fortune feel all funny.
Hey, George, hey, George, you've never
had. Gotta let it laugh so my kids can have more money.
Hey, George, hey, George, you've never had.
When we get more cash, we get a feeling of elation.
Hey, George, hey, George, you've never had.
You can tell the press it's for budget stimulation.
Hey, George.
And welcome back. The billionaires for Bush there. George, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I got a quick joke, and then I'd like to discuss something, if I may.
Okay.
What's the preferred anointing oil that the Christian corporate godsters in the White House prefer?
Well, first of all, I don't consider them Christians, but okay, what's the, I don't know, what is it?
Well, they're Christian corporate.
Yeah, okay.
Godsters, get it? There is a big difference,
yeah,
in my opinion, too.
Yeah.
Their favorite anointing oil is Iraqi crude.
There you go. Yeah, okay. That's pretty apparent, actually. Should have gotten that right away.
Okay.
And your point.
Comment.
Yes, sir.
Going back, Eisenhower,
yes.
Excuse me. Eisenhower bailed out. Okay.
Bailed out. He actually had a heart attack. He wasn't much around for the last year and a half of his term, but he had.
You don't have to agree or disagree or whatever.
Sure. Okay. He bailed out of what?
Well, he bailed out. Kennedy resisted. Johnson tried to hold the fort. Nixon engaged their trade racket. Ford covered that up. Carter positioned their shipping strategy. Reagan and Bush won HPNAC. Clinton legitimized their trade racket. And now we have Bush 2 that's trying to install or implement their distorted biblical.
The New World Order.
Right.
The New World Order. Yeah, okay. I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
So here we are, folks, you know?
Yep, here we are. It's and where do we go from here, Armin? What are you doing about it?
I'm doing everything that I can do legally and lawfully. I'm trying to educate people. I'm trying to help people that truly need help. I'm trying to boycott the people I feel that are consciously supporting what I think is wrong, if I can do that.
Brilliant.
Economically, I have power. Politically, I have some power. I'm just one person. But, you know, a grain of sand can turn into a pearl.
There you go. And enough grains of sand and you've got a mudslide that can take out a city. I mean, you know, it's a well said, Armin. Thank you very much. Usually insightful and pithy comments and much appreciated. Southern California Gas Company. You ever heard of this? Maybe you haven't. You've heard of Sempra, S-E-M-P-R-A Energy? Maybe not. Sempra is a company that owns Southern California Gas. And according to an administrative law judge, after a two-year investigation now, has found this during the energy crisis of 2000-2001. You know, the whole California deal where it was, let's take out Gray Davis and let's get rich in the process. This Republican/Enron con job to, you know, using deregulation to and they were successful. They got Gray Davis out of office. They got further deregulation. They got they got Arnold in, who's a good buddy of them. He was meeting with these people in private before and during the energy crisis. I mean, what's an actor doing meeting with Ken Lay in the Beverly Hills Hotel just before an energy crisis in California? You tell me. Nobody knows. Anyhow, they've just been nailed. Sempra, they got to pay $29 million in profits earned during the period, plus interest. This is just the beginning of it. But the cons and the libertarians have, you know, perhaps a different idea about this. Let me share that with you right after this. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
During his 2002 State of the Union address, President George W. Bush said that running a national deficit was necessary, but could quickly and easily be reversed.
To win the war, protect the homeland, and revitalize our economy. Our budget will run a deficit that will be small and short-term so long as Congress restrains spending and acts in a fiscally responsible manner.
It appears that the Republican-controlled Congress have forgotten about that statement. The U.S. has hit its $7.38 trillion spending limit, but Congress is seeking to raise it to the tune of $650 billion. According to the Center for American Progress, the country actually hit that ceiling in October, but through a series of accounting tricks, Treasury Secretary John Snow was able to avoid breaching the limit. To avert the breach, Snow sent a letter to Congress on Wednesday announcing that he intends to suspend new investments in Treasury securities that would be credited to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. The fund manages the financing and annual payments to retired federal employees and their families. The $650 billion increase to the credit limit comes before President Bush unveils his 2005 budget. The Congressional Budget Office is already estimating that if spending continues at this rate, the national debt will be nearly $14.5 trillion by 2014.
With President Bush's plans to privatize Social Security, people have begun to take a closer look at their retirement plans. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on almost half a million workers as only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says the Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
To erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
If the pension fund were to fail, it would further strain the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to looking for racial equality, looking at the 2,800 administration jobs under President Bush is not a good place to start. Only 7% of those positions are held by blacks. Yes, that does include Secretary of State Colin Powell. Under the Clinton administration, 16% of those jobs went to blacks. Bush has awarded 54% of his political appointments to white men, while under Clinton, women and people of color filled 57% of those same positions.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can't plant no seed where there's only greed.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Southern California Gas Company. I mentioned this before the break, I suppose. I need not read that sentence again. But Rebecca Smith wrote this article in the Wall Street Journal, today's Wall Street Journal. And here's the point. The religion of the conservatives and the neocons and the libertarians is that if you just let the corporations essentially do whatever they want, then everything will turn out just fine. Now, a lot of this goes back to a novel that Ayn Rand wrote back in the 50s called Atlas Shrugged, in which, who is John Galt? Right, in which this noble capitalist is trying to build a railroad, and as I recall, it's been two decades since I read it, but trying to build a railroad, and he's being thwarted at every turn by these vicious, nasty, awful, terrible, horrible, irrational, bizarre government bureaucrats. By the way, have you noticed that whenever the word bureaucrats is used by conservatives, they always preface it with the word government? And they remind you of the Department of Motor Vehicles? Try calling your phone company and asking a question about your service or your bill. Calling your health insurance provider and disputing a charge. If you don't think that the corporate world is rife with bureaucrats, my friends... my friend, you have been listening to Bill O'Reilly far too long. I mean, there are far more bureaucrats in the corporate world in America than there are government bureaucrats. So anyhow, the religion of these cons and libertarians and neocons. A religion which, by the way, has infected the Democratic Party in the form of the Democratic Leadership Council. The Republicans, of course, it's top to bottom, is just somehow the invisible hand of the free market will work everything out. To paraphrase, well, the only paraphrasing is the phrase the invisible hand. Adam Smith, in his book The Wealth of Nations, published in 1776, ironically. When Adam Smith used the phrase the invisible hand in Wealth of Nations. And I recommend you read it, by the way. It's a very dense book. It's very hard to read, but it's really rather remarkable. You discover that Adam Smith was really and truly worried about the power of the East India Company, the British East India Company. He didn't name them, but it's very clear from reading it. They were the world's largest corporation at that time. They had essentially started the United States. They were the, you know, the major economic force in the United States. They were the main power that we fought the Revolutionary War against, in addition to England. They were the power that, you know, they were incorporated in 1601, December 1st, 1601. Queen Elizabeth I signed the Articles of Incorporation that brought into being the British East India Company that, in large part, made it an empire. And you know, the East India Company that the colonists rose up against in Boston Harbor. The Boston Tea Party was a revolt, yes, against the Tea Act of 1773, but the Tea Act of 1773 of the United States, and that's why they rose up. It was the first anti-Walmart, anti-WTO, huge corporate revolt in the United States. But somehow that history is lost on these folks, and they don't really read Adam Smith. I mean, the phrase "the invisible hand" only occurs once in the entire book, Wealth of Nations. And in it, he is warning about the invisible hand of powerful corporate forces like the East India Company. He does say that markets tend to be self-regulatory, but his point is that the reason why you should have trade between nations is so if you have one country that makes good wine and another country, because they have the slopes and, you know, the perfect climate for the grapes and a long tradition of winemaking. You have another country that has good land for sheep and they make good sheep's cheese, or they make good wool, let's say. And you got another country that has good land for cows and they make good cheese. Then the people in these three countries can have sweaters, cheese, and wine all at the same time by trading with each other. And isn't that a good thing? But Adam Smith also explicitly goes out of his way in Wealth of Nations, published in 1776, to say that you must be careful. If you're trading with another country that produces the exact same thing you do, that you may want to protect your domestic industries. And that's why, starting in 1787 in the United States, we had specific tariffs on products manufactured overseas and raw materials as well, so that we could protect our domestic industries. This stuff has, by and large, gone by the way as a result of NAFTA and WTO, but that was really the crescendo. It really began during the Reagan administration. But the nonetheless, conservatives cling to this idea. And, you know, it's interesting because the mouthpieces tend to be the very wealthy, the very well-paid and powerful media folks, the stars, the superstars, the media superstars on talk radio, on television, who promote the idea corporate America has everything under, the corporate world, actually. There is no more corporate America. Halliburton created offshore company, you know, Kellogg Brown and Root, division of Halliburton. Why is it the KBR got all the business in Iraq? Because it's not an American company. It's chartered, as I recall, in the Cayman Islands, or maybe the Bahamas, to avoid paying income tax here. Now, of course, the mail comes into that post office box and then gets rerouted to Dallas or Houston, wherever their headquarters are, down there in Texas. But they say, you know, because it goes through the post office box, we don't have to pay income tax. But we do want to use the American legal system, which is paid for with taxpayer dollars, the American court system. We do want to have a stable American dollar. We do want to use the American currency, which is paid for by the American taxpayer. We do want to use the infrastructure of the United States, the Internet, which was created in large part by our government and, you know, universities that were working with government funding. We do want to use the roads and highways that are paid for with tax dollars. We do want to have an educated workforce that went through public education and, in many cases, attended public universities. But we don't want to pay for any of that. See, we used to call these people freeloaders. Now we call them conservatives. And when the Democrats in Congress tried to attach a rider to the bill, this $87 billion that would have paid for the rebuilding of Iraq and supplied our soldiers. Remember the $87 billion that Kerry voted for before he voted against it? The one he voted for was one that said, if a corporation is going to take any money out of this thing, they have to be an American corporation paying taxes in the United States. The Republicans would have nothing to do with that. They stripped it out of the bill. And the other part of it, of course, was that, and this $87 billion has to be paid for out of current funds. In other words, we're going to have to raise taxes a little bit to pay for this. After all, we're at war. World War II, our tax rate went up to 90%, top tax rate. Stayed there until 1962. And then it only went down to 70% and stayed there until Reagan came along and said, okay, let's throw progressive taxation out the window. After all it's doing is creating a middle class. Now you've got conservatives talking about getting rid of the last of the middle class tax breaks, things like home mortgage deductions. Let's go to a flat tax so that the billionaire pays the same amount as the guy working at the gas station. Wouldn't that be fair? No. The billionaire is using proportionally vastly more of the resources of this country, of the commons of this country, and benefiting much more from the blessings of liberty and of all of the systems in this country. Come on, we understood that. But here we have Sempra. Judge says Sempra unit manipulated gas prices. Somehow this stuff happens, and it doesn't even bounce off this religious faith that these folks have, that, they'll do fine ultimately. They're gonna go back to court again. The next phase focuses, writes Rebecca Smith in the Wall Street Journal, the next phase focuses on possible illegal cooperation between SoCal Gas and Sempra's unregulated energy trading unit, one of the biggest gas and electricity merchants in the nation. Sempra has gone to court several times to block the commission's document requests concerning the trading unit. Gee, why would they do that? I thought if you just left it up to the free market, everything would be fine. Speaking of the free market, we have now privatized not only much of our health care. This is, of course, how Bill Frist made his hundreds of millions, him and his family, perhaps billions, by privatizing hospitals. Used to be, the laws required hospitals to be nonprofit corporations. We've privatized our health care. We've privatized so much. We've privatized large chunks of the functions of our military. This is working out just great for military contractors. But we've even privatized our vote. Our vote. Privatized private for-profit corporations. And it seems that maybe what Sempra did with oil and gas, some of these corporations might be doing with our vote. Nobody knows for sure. Maybe not. One would think not. I mean, one would think that of all things that a corporation would want to be very careful about not messing with, the vote would be at the top of the list. But this news release came out today, and we'll have the follow-up story for this tomorrow because they're holding a press conference this afternoon. But here's the news release. A research team at the University of California, Berkeley, will report that irregularities associated with electronic voting machines may have awarded 130,000 to 260,000 or more excess votes to President George W. Bush in Florida in the 2004 presidential election. The study shows an unexplained discrepancy between votes for President Bush in counties where electronic voting machines were used versus counties where traditional voting methods were used. Discrepancies this large, or larger, rarely arise by chance. The probability is less than 0.1%. That's 1 in 1,000. The research team, led by Professor Michael Hout, will formally disclose results of the study at the press conference. This is in the PR Newswire. So hopefully we'll have more of that later today. as time goes on. Notice to room, troll gone, back to normal. We had a troll in our... Oh, I missed it. That's anyway. The chat room, it's really a hoot every now and then. Somebody will drop into our chat room and just try to raise a ruckus, and it's entertaining. It can be very entertaining. Bob Herbert has a great op-ed piece in the New York Times. It backs up against stuff that is going on in today's paper. He points out that in New York City, pupils of public schools 63 in the South Bronx have to take their gym classes in the school's lobby. They don't have a gymnasium. Their teacher, Rose Gelrod, has marked a jogging path on the lobby's floor. These makeshift classes, writes Bob Herbert, as reporter Susan Saluni informed us, quote, are regularly interrupted by foot traffic to bathrooms and deliveries to the cafeteria. In fact, nearly a fifth of the city's schools lack gymnasiums. 94% have no athletic fields. More than half have no playgrounds. But the city is going to build a playground for somebody else. And they're going to pay for it with $600 million in city and state funds from the taxpayers. I would think that would be easily enough to pay for a lot of playgrounds for a lot of schools. But no, this is going to be the same thing in New York City that George W. Bush did when he owned the Houston Rangers? In Texas. He wants the taxpayers to build a stadium so that his for-profit business can make more money. As the Times' Duff Wilson notes, he, this being Robert Wood Johnson IV, is one of the biggest Republican fundraisers in the nation, and his grateful allies, President Bush, Governor George Pataki, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg, make up a rare triple play of powerful support. So, yeah, we're going to provide some welfare to the billionaire, but we're not going to pay for our schools. In the meantime, today, David Rogers reports in the Wall Street Journal, a year-end budget bill taking shape in Congress would drastically slow the growth in federal support for education and non-defense scientific research to meet spending targets set by the Republican leadership and the White House. They're going to cut back on science funding. They're going to cut back on education funding. Total funding for the Department of Education is expected to be less than President Bush's request for fiscal 2005. On it goes. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Jazz Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.
And suffered an injury serious enough to retire.
Harvard recently released a study that estimated the number of veterans who have no medical care at about 1.7 million.
David Chasteen is a director of Operation Truth, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. He served in the Army for 4 years and is now part of the Individual Ready Reserve.
The Bush administration, like a lot of folks, is really good about talking about taking care of soldiers. And it's just very easy to talk about those sorts of things. It doesn't really cost anything. But there are a lot of guys out there with a lot of real issues.
Chasteen says that persistent underfunding has caused many sick or disabled veterans to have to wait for months for care.
Oftentimes we're dead last on the legislative priority list. And, you know, just as an example, in fiscal year 2005, they plan on cutting 10 VA hospitals and a little shy of $1 billion from the VA budget, even though we're still in a war.
As of January 2004, the VA has announced new rules that exclude hundreds of thousands of vets whose incomes are now considered too high to qualify for benefits.
Under the new eligibility requirements, if you make more than, I think it's $26,000 a year, then you're not going to be eligible for a number of VA benefits that you would have been eligible to before. And this obviously amounts to a pretty significant cut for a number of folks who were counting on that medical care, especially for retired folks.
The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Once you're out of the military, the VA only has to provide medical coverage for ailments that are related to your service. And it's easy for the VA to say, we don't want to deal with this. We think this is a pre-existing condition, and you're not going to receive treatment.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We bang the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight, you can show me a new place to start.
Fresh from the election triumph, Republicans in the White House, writes David Rogers in today's Wall Street Journal. Welcome back, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. Hope to use the budget talks to consolidate their gains, and the omnibus measure could yet become a vehicle to expedite unrelated legislation weakening food labeling requirements approved when Democrats controlled the Senate in the last Congress. You get this? The Republicans... I shouldn't laugh. I mean, it's so outrageous. The Republicans... It flush with the, you know, just still all excited about the fact that they control all the branches of government. You know, the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, the White House. That they are they're just going to just start taking this stuff apart. Let's take apart Medicaid. Let's bankrupt it. In the meantime, we'll let the pharmaceutical companies get incredibly rich. Let's take apart Social Security. We'll turn it over to Bear Stearns or to Citicorp or to one of our other big friends. Let's take apart the American military. Parcel off pieces of it to Halliburton. Well, not to Halliburton, because that's an American corporation that pays taxes here, to Halliburton's Kellogg, Brown, and Root division, which pays no taxes here. And then we'll help out Monsanto and these other. Expedite unrelated legislation weakening food labeling requirements. Elsewhere, cuts will be imposed on funding for clean water projects, small business loan subsidies. Do you expect to see the story of this in the mainstream media? I just find it so ironic that there's good reporting on this stuff in the Wall Street Journal. It's like the wealthy and powerful talking to themselves and just saying, "Hey, here's the deal, guys. We're gonna rip off the consumers. We're gonna take the country. You know, we're gonna just do whatever we want." They're saying. But you won't find it in USA Today, I suspect. We'll find out. See how it gets covered. This year-end budget bill, full of goodies. Thanks to Louise today for producing our program, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, the folks at Cable Radio Network, systems all across the country, to our sponsors, to Mike Toth and Ben Birch, to the folks in our chat room, and to you. See you tomorrow.
Archives of this program and more information.
They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.org and read his weekly column, "Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa." Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.